Hello, everybody. Welcome to Inside Geocaching HQ. This is our podcast from or about Geocaching HQ in Seattle. I normally say from, but we're not there right now. We're at our homes as we are going to be talking on this episode. And my fellow lackey who is joining me today is Maria McDonald. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Chris. Hi, everybody.
So yeah, we usually say we're inside HQ. We are not inside HQ right now. We are at undisclosed locations, and we're gonna hear about the kind of stuff that you do at HQ. But I guess just to get started, how's everything going for you during this crazy time?
Yeah, it's going okay. I feel extremely lucky to, of course, number one, have a job like that. I'm just so grateful. I've been grateful from the day I started at geocaching, but that's just really, really prevalent now too. Just how grateful I am to have work that feels meaningful and something to keep me busy and engaged during this time. So really grateful for that. And I also am just really reflecting on, I love my little apartment here in Seattle, location still undisclosed, but it's a little apartment, but with just a big window, and the spring sunshine is starting to come in. So I know that things are really hard for a lot of people out there, and I have a ton of empathy and a lot of compassion for all the different ways people are struggling, both internally and externally right now with everything that's going on. And I just feel really grateful for what I have, and really glad that I am able to stay connected to people virtually right now and to the communities that I care about, because that's helping keep me in a good headspace, and feeling like I'm able to support others even virtually is keeping me motivated to stay positive myself. So I'm getting through. So far, everyone I know and love is healthy and safe, and I'm grateful for that too.
Well, there is a lot to talk about as far as your journey at Geocaching HQ over the years and what you do at the company, and especially stuff that's very pertinent to what we're going through right now. But just to kind of start with, what team are you on at HQ? What is your job title, and kind of what is your normal day-to-day like at HQ?
Yes, I love it. God, I love talking about my job at geocaching. And I think my friends are all sick of me talking about it, so I'm glad you asked. So I actually have been a lackey for 7 years this month. I'm about to have my 7-year lackiversary, which is amazing. I've had several different roles at the company, which has been really fun to see how things have shifted over the years. I started as an office manager there and was the office manager for, I think, 3 or 4 years. And then I ended up taking on all of the facilities and am the facilities manager now. At some point, I was on the video production team, so I got to roll around with Reed and Derek and a few other lackeys of the past, and we got to make some really awesome videos in super cool places and engaged with different geocachers in the community in really awesome ways. So those were some real highlights of my time at geocaching. And then now I actually am the manager of our learning and development program, which didn't exist at headquarters before I started building it. So I've been building that out for the last 3 years now, and it's been amazing. I absolutely love my job. And I get to work with lackeys all day in really cool, unique ways. I get to work with each team. I get to work with our leadership team. I get to work with brand new lackeys who are just starting in their first couple weeks. So between the two roles, I'm still the facilities manager and the learning and development manager. So sometimes I'm sitting down, leading trainings and helping onboard people to our culture and to the things that we really are passionate about, what our values are. At the game and or at the company and for the game. And then I'm also running around like fixing the sink when it breaks, or at least calling a plumber. No one wants me actually fixing the sink, but making sure the plumber gets called, and keeping our furniture up to date and paint on our walls and all of that funny stuff. So I have a really, really wide range of responsibilities, and I like it. It keeps me really busy. It keeps me learning things. I learned all about new carpeting this last year. Never thought I'd care about that at all, but now you could ask me any carpet questions, I'd be able to answer them. So yeah, I really love how I've been able to grow at the company, and it's amazing to see and reflect on 7 years how many different things I've gotten to do and all of the different opportunities that have been presented to me because of geocaching.
As you were mentioning how your first job was as the office manager, it actually reminded me of, I still have it burned into my memory. My first memory of you was you showing me around the office, and this would have been, it'll be 6 years this fall when this happens, because I only came in about a year after you did. And I remember, I don't know if you just had a certain look in your eyes that made me really take it seriously, but you said, we were walking by the dishwasher and you said, you know, we all, everybody pitches in here. We, you know, make sure, you know, we unload this dishwasher, unload this dishwasher. And I was like, man, I'm going to take that seriously. And I really fell for it, because I think I was one of like four or five people that actually took that seriously. There's like four or five of us that are actually doing this on a regular basis. Everybody else.
Oh, that's great.
That's what I remember. Every time I walk by the dishwasher, I think of you, like in my head, like, don't ignore that. Don't let it just sit there. Do something with it.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm really glad that resonated with you. I think I gave everybody the same spiel, but maybe I had a little extra. I bet some people hadn't been unloading it the last few days before I cured you, so I was in a particular mood about it.
Well, you now tell me about the team that you're on, because it's Team Unicorn.
Yes, it is.
I'm not sure if I've known where that came from. Where did that come from?
That is a great question. It originated, I want to say, 4 or 5 years ago. So when we started, I started as the office manager, that wasn't the name of the team. We were office and facilities, you know, a very obvious team name. And at some point, I believe it's when office and management started working under HR or under legal and with HR. So Team Unicorn is comprised of five outstanding individuals. We have Jennifer Arterburn, head of legal, Eileen Kim in HR, Amin and Linda and myself. So I get to work with four just really, really amazing people. And I believe it's when those three departments all started to come together that we realized that what makes unicorns so special is that they're magical and rare. And we decided that all of us together in these different roles were this really unique combination of gifts and skills and experiences. It didn't normally necessarily fit together at a company, but, you know, Geocaching HQ is a special place. So they were fitting together for us there at this company. And so we decided that we were rare and magical, and that we obviously needed to be called the unicorns then because of that.
Do you guys have anything planned for National Unicorn Day?
What? There's a National Unicorn Day?
I can't believe you didn't know this. I got to be really quiet when I say this, because my wife loves unicorns, and I did something for her for National Unicorn Day, and it's April 9th. Now, we're recording this on April 8th.
Oh,
I don't know when this will end up going out, but just peek behind the curtain. We're not recording this like the day that you hear it. It's going to be a few days later. But so anyway, it's April 9th. It's
National Unicorn Day. Okay. I'm so glad you told me that, because now I can surprise my team with something tomorrow. I will definitely do that.
Well, that's what I'm doing. I got her a cake. They had one at the grocery store. I'm having a hard time keeping it a secret.
Yeah. Where are you hiding a cake right now?
It's in our guest room closet. And the problem is we're like 20 feet away from each other. She's probably hearing this whole, I'm trying to keep it quiet. And I hope that on the recording, people can actually hear me talking. But, you know, if they can't, then that's just a sacrifice that has to be made. But anyway, yeah, they actually had one at the store, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, I've got to get that. But I guess my next thing should have been to text you and say,
yes,
guess what I saw.
Okay, well, will you make sure that you take a picture of that? Because maybe what I could do is I could send a picture of the magical cake to all my colleagues. I think they would like that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. A picture of a cake is always just as good as actually having the cake, right?
They'll love that.
Oh my gosh. So as your role has evolved at HQ and now learning and development, talk about that a little bit, because that's probably something maybe people have heard about, but maybe they don't actually do it at their own companies. Mm-hmm. They might not have as much personal experience with it. So what does that mean? What kind of projects does that involve at HQ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I think that learning and development, although not a new field necessarily, is definitely gaining in popularity in the last 10, 20 years, I would say, as companies really start to transition in their mindsets towards, I would say maybe younger generations that are wanting a lot faster, different upward mobility in their careers. So that's part of it, is that people just have a lot more, culturally, I think things have just shifted now and people expect that their professional growth and the things they learn are part of a service that they're getting provided by their employers. So I know that's kind of a new school versus an old school mentality, but that seems to be pretty popular. That also might just be a US thing. I guess I can't speak for everybody. Like, that could be more popular in other parts of the world, but in the US that seems to have gained a lot of traction in the last decade. So now I think a lot of people that are younger in the workforce are expecting when they get hired at a business that that job, that business, that organization has a plan for how they're going to develop their professional skills and work towards their professional goals. So that's certainly a part of it. And typically those departments or people in those learning and development positions seem to be more popular in larger companies, like companies of 150, 200, 300 people seem to be when businesses start adding in that role. We were, I think, unique in that at headquarters, mostly because we built the entire learning and development program off of our foundational training at headquarters, which is our 7 habits of highly effective people. So we used Dr. Covey's book and his 3-day training to really give all of our lackeys a really solid foundation in what it means to operate effectively. That's in how we communicate with each other, how we work on projects together, the way we think about building and designing and creating. So the 7 habits was a pretty solid foundation. I think, Chris, I don't know if we took the training together or if I might have shadowed the training you were in with Kersey. I can't remember where you entered.
I can't remember either. I feel like you facilitated it by the time I did it. Maybe I missed one round and then the next time, but I'm pretty sure that you were the one that took us through that. And I'll admit, I mean, I think as people listen to this, people are probably having different reactions when they hear about this kind of stuff, right? You have some people that are like, oh, whatever, that's just, I don't really buy into that stuff or what have you. And then you got some people that are gung-ho about it and they really feel that it's effective. I was probably somewhere in the middle with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I had never done it at my previous jobs. And so when I heard about it, I was like, oh, come on, I know how to communicate. I know how. But once you've gone through it, you start seeing it in action, it's so valuable for everybody to be using the same language and having being on the same page as far as expectations and it's kind of amazing how it's become ingrained into the environment at HQ.
Yeah, I think we're a stronger company who's able to serve our community better because of it. Like, obviously I believe that because I teach it, but I really do think it's, like you said, that common language. It helps us relate to each other in a way that helps us ultimately work together better, which is what we want, right? Like I think most people want to go to jobs where the work they do matters. They know they're doing something that's meaningful and the people they're doing that work with are a pleasant addition to their lives, right? Like, you don't want to go to work and either dislike the work you're doing or have a hard time getting along with your colleagues. That is a drain and a waste of your energy and your creativity and your ability to serve your clients or your community. So I think that HQ has done a really good job of building a solid foundation where we can work together in such a way that we're able to do better, cooler, more interesting stuff because the human aspect of it is working together more seamlessly. So that feels really important. And you definitely, I've taught that course now over at least 5, maybe 6 years. And it's amazing to see how people are able to take it and integrate it and start using it. And I get so much good feedback from people that not only have they been able to use it at work in ways that are really helpful, but they take these skills home to their families and to their friends and to the people they care about, and they're able to see their lives get a little smoother, operate a bit more effectively in those arenas as well. And that feels really meaningful just as a person who's helping share those skills and those tools. And one thing they say is that the 7 habits they're common sense, but they're not necessarily common practice. So you could read the book and you could hear what the habits are and kind of be like, yeah, obviously those things are useful, but that doesn't mean people are doing them habitually, right? And that's a part of the training, is how do you actually take those skills and use them on a daily, regular basis so that your entire life operates from a more effective place.
And another thing that you do, well, I say another thing, it's like other things that you do because there's so many of them here, but as people are trying to figure out ways that they can become more effective in their roles at HQ, I know that you help a lot of people with trying to identify, I don't know, a seminar that you can do or or different tools that might be available. And how do you go about trying to figure out what's out there? I mean, there's so much and so many different possibilities. What kind of research do you do, or how do you get your brain wrapped around that stuff so that you can present to a lackey some options that might be helpful for them in their jobs?
Yeah. Oh, also great question. I think about two ways. One, I think we have training opportunities internally and then externally. So that's the first thing I look at. If people come to me and they have training needs, and I start to sense a pattern of their needs, and it seems like something that can be addressed internally for our work culture, then I'll usually design some sort of internal trainings. Like we have six core competencies at geocaching, and we've been doing trainings on each of those competencies, just as an example, or smaller things too, how to have effective meetings. Again, you might think that that's common sense, but if everybody's running their own version of what they think an effective meeting is, it's not effective as a company culture. So we try to do things internally that support the entire company and working together more effectively. And then what has been really fun and a challenge for me as someone who's only, you know, 2 to 3 years into this field, is I work with our developers, our people on our marketing team, people in partners and promotions, just people from all over the office in all their different roles, on what sort of external trainings they can go to. And there's a few interesting, not barriers, I guess, but a few things that make that challenging. One is that there's typically way more information than you actually need. There's so many trainings and workshops and webinars, and they all cost money, and they all want you to get certified in their specific thing. You know, there's just so many things out there that a big part of the problem is just narrowing it down to the content and the training experience that's really going to provide the most value, the most learning value at that price point. So I've gotten pretty good at knowing what to look for at this point. Like when people bring me trainings or things that they're interested in, I've gotten good at knowing how to look up that specific training or that educational opportunity and get a sense of how good it's going to be. I think another thing that I am able to help with, or how it typically goes, is a lackey will come and talk to me, have some ideas of what they want to learn about, and we'll do a little narrowing in, like, okay, well, why is this skill important to you at this time? What value is it going to add to your team in addition to just your own skill set? And then how is that going to add value to the company as well? And when they can get really crystal clear on why that skill is going to be helpful, then we start to broaden out and just look at as many options as we can find. And then we start to narrow it down to what we think is going to really match our, either sometimes it's match our company culture. Like, is it a training that's also in the outdoor industry or in the gaming industry or in the tech industry? Cause we're kind of in all three industries. So we can narrow it in that way. And, or sometimes you send them to a training in a totally different industry, because that can help people bring back skills that we already know we're kind of circulating in the industries we're used to, but what is some other totally different industry doing that we could learn something from? So those are some different ways to approach it. And we're very lucky that HQ has a budget for learning and development. So typically lackeys, if and when they choose, they can go to one, maybe two trainings or learning and development opportunities per year, because we recognize that there's incredible value in them getting more skills and then being able to bring them back to headquarters and use them to help us improve. It also does help with retention too. If people are learning and growing their skills and able to contribute in more meaningful ways, they're going to want to stay and be a lackey even longer. So it's doing seven habits. It's called a win-win, which is what we're always after. So it's a win for the individual lackey, and it's a win for the company as well.
Yeah. And most of the time when we do these interviews on Inside HQ, we are hearing about people talking about specific work that they're doing on an app project or on the website or what have you. But what you're describing is work that you're doing that's hopefully enabling these people to come back and do better work on those apps and on those website projects so that it eventually is delivering great stuff to the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, technology changes so fast. The way those apps are being built shifts all the time. And we do have fairly good retention of our lackeys at headquarters. So we have some developers and other people that have been with the company for year after year after year. And we want to make sure they're getting the exposure that they need to whatever is new, whatever is, you know, new products, new developments, new software, anything that's coming out that's helping us get better and helping us improve. We want to make sure that we're adapting to that as quickly as possible and integrating it where it makes sense for us so that we can build cooler stuff so the community can have even more fun out there geocaching, which is ultimately what everyone who works there wants, right? Like, we want people outside playing the game in the way that really makes sense for them and the people they care about. And the more sharp we can be in our skill set, the better we're able to deliver that to everybody else.
Well, let's talk about some of the challenges that are presented now with this new paradigm that we're all facing here with people working remotely. At HQ, I guess it's been just over a month now that we've been all working outside of the office. And I know that you and the folks on your team have been looking for ways to help lackeys do their jobs better, but not just do their jobs better, also just trying to help them with their, you know, just their, the mental side of things and just kind of, you know, looking for ways to get through this as best we can. And I wonder if you could talk about, again, is there research that you do for this? Is there, how do you go about trying to, you know, identify methods that we should be considering as workers and as people?
Yeah, man, what a pressing thing right now. This has been everything I've been immersed in this last, I think it has been a month today. I think we got sent home a month ago today. So that has definitely taken over my whole world is, so it's a few things, right? Like, we know we're all virtual now. So one part of it is what tools are going to help us do that the best, you know? So it's just actually like, how do we get to see each other's faces and hear each other's voices and share screens and all of the technical stuff that goes along with an entirely remote workforce? So that has been part of it too, just trying to find the right tools for us that are going to serve us right now, enabling us to stay connected and work most effectively. And that side has been a pretty steep learning curve for me as someone who doesn't necessarily adapt to technology really easily. That's been challenging. But pretty much 100% of the work I do involves our people. And so I had to figure that out really quick so that I could stay connected to everybody. So the technical piece is part of it, and then making sure everyone else knows and feels comfortable using the technology too. Like right now, like a lot of us, we're using Zoom, and some people have never used that before. So it's just trying as quickly as possible to figure out all the features, which ones are actually adding value versus which ones are just kind of maybe cool but noisy and not really that helpful. Because we don't want anyone to feel or get left behind because they're not able to participate in the same way, right? That's a big part of learning, development, and facilitation is equal participation. Everybody's voice needs to be heard. So how do we make sure our tools are setting us up to do that? That's part of it. And the other part that to me feels even more compelling and I would say urgent is how do we make sure, like you said, the mental side of this, right? This is a different sort of stressor than any of us have ever experienced. And the mental health tolls that that takes on people are significant, and they are now, and they could get more significant. Just the stress and the anxiety and the fear that people are potentially living under right now is just, we've never done anything like this. And the isolation piece too, right? Like, people have such unique different living situations, but everyone's more socially isolated no matter what sort of living situation you're in right now than we're used to. So to me, one of the most important things about my role right now at headquarters is how do we make sure people still feel connected to the community of their colleagues and the community of everybody playing the game? We don't want people to feel alone or like they're going through this by themselves, even though it can feel like that sometimes. So what can we do as a company culture, and what can I do to help contribute to people knowing for sure that they still belong to a very strong company, a very strong company culture. We care a lot about our lackeys and about each other. And we want to make sure people still know that and feel that even when they're not seeing each other's faces and being in our really amazing shared space together right now. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of research on it, lots of articles, tons of podcasts, talking to a lot of my other facilitator friends. I'm part of like an international network of facilitators, and facilitators are all about building community and keeping people connected. So it's been a lot of how do we take some of those skills that we've been studying for a long time and make them virtual. So let's see, I can share a few resources that I look to for some of those answers. And I can also share a few, I think, pretty creative, fun things that we're doing at Geocaching, if either of those things sound interesting.
They do sound interesting.
Cool. So one person who I'm really following right now as far as a leader in keeping people connected is a woman named Priya Parker, P-R-I-Y-A, last name Parker. She gave a very popular TED Talk maybe a year ago, on why we gather, and then wrote a really amazing book called The Art of Gathering. So she is, her background's in peace negotiations through many different complex situations. And she's all about how and why you bring people together and how you make those gatherings meaningful. So now she's writing a lot on how to do that virtually. So she's someone that I follow pretty closely. She just came out with a podcast, so I'm excited about that. This is kind of a crossover between this and the other thing, but TED right now, TED Talks has something they're doing called TED Circles, where you can get a group of people together and watch a TED Talk virtually together and talk about the TED Talk. So me and four other lackeys got together last week and watched the Priya Parker talk on how to keep communities connected in a virtual world, and came up with some ideas for what we could do to help support our colleagues right now based on some of the thoughts that she had. One of which is to run TED circles every week and invite people to watch TED talks on different things. So TED's got a lot of really cool programming going on right now. And we're going to watch one this week, a speaker who's a rabbi talking about what it means to stay connected during Passover right now, and how to keep courage and hope alive in this interesting chapter. So we're going to experiment a little bit more with TED circles and then maybe open those up to the rest of the company too, to see if anybody else wants to do them with us. Priya Parker has been huge. TED Talks are doing awesome. They're just doing really good work every morning. There's a podcast called The Happiness Lab. That's a really good one. They're doing a great job of speaking to cultural things that are important that have to do with COVID right now without, I think, actually talking too much about COVID. Like, I don't want to hear stats or updates every minute of the day. But I do want to hear how to stay connected to people and how to be a meaningful contributing member of society right now when you can't directly, go shake hands with your neighbor. So the Happiness Lab has had some useful information. And then Leanne Hughes runs a really interesting facilitation network online on Facebook called The Flip Chart. And so that is a group of facilitators from all over the world who are on that Facebook page. And they have a lot of cool stuff happening right now too. And they sort of are walking those two lines of what technology should we be using right now to keep people connected. And also when you, let's say, for example, start a Zoom call, can you take a moment before you just dive right into that content to give people some sort of icebreaker or energizer or way to connect? And it can be as simple as everybody pick up your favorite item that's around you right now and hold it up and share with the group why this is your favorite coffee cup, or, why you're sitting next to your favorite pillow. It's not a huge thing, but it keeps people feeling that personal connection to other people. So trying to weave those in as much as you can, even using the technology.
Yeah, we should have done that at the start of this thing.
What would you have shown me? What do you have?
I have some gift cards. I've got a couple cables. I have a brochure from a national park. Just nothing all that interesting. I'd really have to. You were talking about Zoom a second ago. I feel kind of bad that this conversation hasn't been Zoom bombed.
I know.
I mean, I feel now. Like I'm being left out. I haven't been in a meeting yet that's been Zoom bombed. And I feel like as I'm saying that, somebody somewhere out in the ether has heard me and they're going to do it. But yeah, I mean, there's so many, as you have these new technologies and people are trying to find ways to connect, of course, on the flip side, they're having to think about these potential downsides to the whole thing.
Totally. Yeah. And the privacy issues are crazy. I mean, in addition to my role at headquarters, I also teach yoga on the side. So now I'm 100% virtual yoga teacher, which is never something I ever wanted to do or thought would be interesting. And now I'm teaching yoga classes from my living room where everyone, you know, can see my whole house. It's just so bizarre. I also haven't been Zoom bombed yet either, which is, I kind of am excited for it to happen at some point.
Yeah, I think we should both be careful about what we ask for on that. But one thing you had alluded to earlier was some of the things that we've done at HQ to try to keep people engaged. And I know there's been virtual happy hours and virtual lunchrooms. And are there other things that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head?
Those are good ones to start with. And I think what's so funny about both of those, so virtual lunches, just pretty much what they sound, you invite everybody and anyone who wants to come have lunch together can. No agenda. It's mostly just a lot of watching people make sandwiches or like Annie had that crazy sword in the background. We're like, well, Annie, why do you have a samurai sword in the back of your kitchen? Like, so it's kind of fun to see into people's, you know, lives that way during lunchtime. And then the virtual happy hour that we did, similar, only this one had a theme, and that was bring your pets. So everybody got to bring their pets, and they did a little, I don't know if they did a pet parade, but showed off each other's pets during the virtual call. So those two things are, you know, obviously easy, and they make a difference, right? They help you feel happier and just more connected. So those are two really easy ones. Another one we've started doing is at headquarters, we celebrate people's birthdays and what's called their lackiversaries. So how many lackey years they have behind them. So normally they get an email and maybe their desk decorated. And what we're doing now is sending people personal cards in the mail and maybe some little gifts with that, which again, these are small gestures, but people seem really happy when they get them. And I just think it's a good way to remind people that we're connected to each other. We've also, the TED circles, that's a cool one. We're going to keep playing with that to make sure we've got the tech part of it figured out. But then I think we're going to open that up too and let that be a way that people connect with each other. What else have we been doing? So our office manager, Linda, she didn't want to come on the podcast, but she is an amazing and absolutely necessary part of HQ life. She is an incredible baker. So one thing is, I think being on quarantine, a lot of us are going to lose some weight because I know that without Linda's baked goods constantly in front of me, I just am not snacking nearly as much. But that's also obviously a big loss. So Linda has been making cookies and bread and cookies and bread. Those are the big things. And then lackeys will go to her house and from the appropriate 6 feet away, they will do some sort of exchange where she'll pass the cookies out and they will pass in some sort of snack or some sort of baked good that they brought.
Or raw materials. Like flour and sugar. It's like.
Totally. So that has been really fun. And she's just been organizing that so that people can still get her baked goods. I believe last week there was a cookie exchange for a gallon of tequila or margaritas that had been mixed up and ready for her. So that's been a fun way to watch people still, you know, at least you get to see someone in person for a minute and exchange something she puts a lot of heart into what she makes. So.
Well, and just to be clear on this too, I mean, people are referred to as excellent bakers all the time. Linda is like crazy. I mean, it's like if she posts in our Slack channel, there's a channel just for the Signal Cafe. If she, back in regular times when we were all in the office, if Linda posts that she has put something in the kitchen, bread or cookies or whatever, you had best get there quickly because it is gone. Like, it doesn't matter how much she brings. Give it 10, 15 minutes. It's just going to be a pile of crumbs. There's no chance. That's how good she is.
Yep, it's true. Yeah, she's expert level. So we're all very lucky to get to take advantage of that. And it's nice to have some of those things. I think that's what I would say for people listening. If you think about some of those things that your company culture, maybe in your family culture, or other communities you're part of, that are just these staple moments of connection, how can you take those and transfer them into our world now? Right? Like maybe you can't create it exactly, but if food is a driving force, which it is for so many of us, or like one person's baked goods, or like certain celebrations or certain moments that where communities just gather around those moments, how can you transfer them now? And how can you adapt them to fit the times now in a way where they're still really meaningful? Yeah, and you can be a little choosy. That's kind of nice too. Like you don't have to recreate the stuff that maybe wasn't working. Like maybe some of that stuff can fall away now, right? Like maybe some of those meetings we had on our calendars that we all thought were really important, maybe they aren't so important, and this is a chance to look at that. So how do we identify what was really serving us, move that forward into this new way of being right now, and then let go of some of the stuff that really wasn't that helpful so that we can make space for new creative ways to connect and to work really well together.
Right. Well, before we wrap up, we have a series of quick questions that we'll ask you here. Okay. You're the first one that's done this on the podcast. So you're our first victim with this series of questions. Okay. Let's start with, what is your geocaching username?
Oh, I love my username. It's AK Princess Warrior. And let me be clear, the AK stands for Alaska, not Arkansas. No offense to anyone from Arkansas, but I am Alaska born and raised. So AK Princess Warrior is my username.
AK Princess Warrior. In I guess one sentence or two, how would you describe your job to a stranger?
I help manage an office that runs an outdoor adventure game. And my job is to support and create company culture while helping people learn and develop.
Nice. Okay. What do you most love about geocaching?
Oh, man. So many things to love about it. I love being outside and I love connecting with people. So those are two very obvious things that are part of the fabric of this amazing game. And I think some of my favorite moments are those moments where you end up in a place where the view is just spectacular, or the cache was hidden so creatively, you could have never seen it coming. And it really gives you one of those wonderful awe type of moments. Or you run into someone and they somehow hear that you are a geocacher, and now you have this whole new thing to talk about with a stranger because they also are a geocacher, or like their aunt's a geocacher. And you know, so you have like these connections with people. I also just, the events just blow my mind. It's incredible how much time and effort and energy and thoughtfulness get put into these events by the hosts, and how they're magical. I mean, I just feel like they're like the Disneyland equivalent of geocaching, is these incredible events where people get to go and just have these amazing days or amazing weekends, really engrossed in this passion that they have that brings them so much joy, and then sharing that with the people around them. I just think those are such incredible moments of connection and community. I really, really love those. And the stories people bring back, like when lackeys get to go and travel, and go to those events and then come back to headquarters, they just come back just on fire, you know, to do their jobs even better and to like build cooler stuff and to get out there and go geocaching more, because that enthusiasm is so contagious. So that's, I don't think that's one thing. I don't think I answered your question at all.
No, you did. You had a lot of great things to mention there about what's great about geocaching. Yeah. This should be an easy one. What's your favorite movie?
Okay, this is kind of nerdy, but I just watched it with my family the other day. My favorite movie of all time is Singing in the Rain.
Oh, that's a nice movie.
It's old school, but I love it. I grew up watching it. I think I have almost every word. Between me and my sister, we have every word, every song memorized. And now my 10-year-old niece likes it too. So we get to watch it as a family together. It's pretty special.
Very cool. What's your favorite hobby?
Man, it depends on what month you ask me. They change pretty quickly. Favorite hobbies do a lot of reading, if that's a hobby.
Sure.
I do a lot of yoga, lots of it all the time. I'm teaching or I'm practicing or I'm studying or taking anatomy classes or learning how to weight train. I love geeking out about all the stuff our bodies are capable of doing physically. So I love movement, and any style of movement, I would say, is also my hobby.
Yeah, I'm always impressed with anybody that likes yoga that much, because I only tried it once and it was a disaster. I have no, I'm an old distance runner, and distance runners have notoriously bad hamstring or tight hamstrings. And so I remember the first time I went, everybody just immediately went into a really impressive pose. And I was like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Tight hamstrings have a hard time in yoga classes. Most of those positions very, very much need some open hamstrings.
Right. Favorite place to visit?
Oh, these are good. As a general, anywhere new. I love going new places. So any place to visit is a place I have not yet been. That being said, I would go back to Greece and or Costa Rica again in a heartbeat, because I've been very fortunate to go to both of those places and I've really, really loved them.
Awesome. And finally, favorite geocaching memory?
I was probably at the company within the first year, and I was out, and it was a summer promo. I love the summer promos that we do in the summertime, because the weather in Seattle is always perfect. There's a ton of lackeys you can find to go caching with you anytime. So it was a summer promo, and me and a group of lackeys decided to go find caches on a bike, riding our bikes around, which is not something I normally do in the city either. So we were on bikes, there was a huge group of us, and we were going around finding caches. And there was one, Chris, you might remember this one. It might have been before your time, actually, because it got taken down fairly several years ago. It was in the side of like a Safeway or an Agora's, a grocery shop. And it was the side of the wall had all these really big rocks, and it just looked like just the whole entire wall was covered in rocks, small rocks, big rocks. That was what they had used for the siding. And there's a geocache somewhere in that wall. And it was just like, we looked forever and couldn't find it. And, finally, at one point, someone sort of put their hand up on a wall in a moment of like, ugh, I give up, I can't find it. And their hand hit the rock that happened to be the geocache. And it twisted, so that was weird. And when it twisted, it pulled out this entire like hollow tube that had been drilled into the side of this building. So this whole, the rock was just the cover, and it pulled out this whole long tube, and that was the geocache. So when you put it, went right back into the wall, squeezed tight, pull it out, and it was just, I don't know how we found it. I don't know how they built that. I just, the whole thing about it was so cool. And to know that so many people had walked by that wall all day, every day, and had no idea that that treasure was hidden there. I just think that's so fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. Well, you made it through the questions.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, Maria, thank you so much. I think folks will learn a lot from the stuff that you shared, and it's always fun to meet another lackey at HQ, and I'm glad we were finally able to get you on here.
Yeah, same. Thanks for having me, Chris. Really nice to get to spend some time with everybody. Thank you. Stay safe and healthy and well, and go find some geocaches if you can.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we're going to keep trying to do the Inside HQ podcast. As you can see, we're doing it remotely. If you have ideas for the podcast, you can send us an email to podcast@geocaching.com. We always love to get your ideas, and we'll see if we can do something with those. And until next time, from me and Maria and all of the lackeys at HQ, happy caching.